third episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is co-host Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
How's it going, Adam? Hello!
How was your week in between episodes, Jordan?
It was good. It was good. Saw the new episode of Gotham and really enjoyed it. Yes. It was a good week. How about you, man?
Same here. I saw episode 2 of Gotham, and they're 2 for 2 in my book. But we'll get to that review at a later date because we have a plan for TV. And
we won't be reviewing that episode specifically, yes, but we'll be talking more about Gotham down the line.
But we have a special plan for television. And we'll tell you that when we probably will let you in on info when we do the premiere week of the Arrowverse shows. We do have some news and a Batman the Animated Series review to cover tonight. So why don't we get things started? What are some of the news items this week?
All right, well, let's start with film news, Adam. The first thing is just a quick little tidbit, which is that the Flashpoint script has been turned in.
Yes, according to Justin Kroll, he revealed, of course, the film reporter from Variety indicated that the Flash script had just been turned in. And he made note that Robert Zemeckis is still a frontrunner, but that the studio would continue to entertain meetings with directors. My fingers are still crossed that it'll ultimately be Robert Zemeckis when we do get that announcement. But it's nice to know that the script is done, and that Flashpoint is moving forward. Any thoughts on that, Jordan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just exciting every time one of these films sort of takes the next step towards, you know, making progress. I think this is the Joby Harold script, I believe.
Yes.
The way okay, yeah, cool. So he did like a page one rewrite. Mm-hmm. And I guess at the time, I don't think we knew this, but the page one rewrite, I suppose, is changing it to be Flashpoint.
Yeah.
You know, that's exciting. I'm really looking forward to this film. And as you alluded to, Robert Zemeckis would be my first choice as well for this movie. So that would be awesome if he were to sign on as director. But for now, thumbs up for me in terms of this news.
Yeah, the faster we hear news on this movie, the more excited I'll be. But if it needs, you know, hey, take your time and get it right. Because I think Ezra Miller is going to be a standout in Justice League. And so that makes me even more excited for the possibilities of Flashpoint. And especially the fact that I've read that story and I adore that story. I couldn't be more excited for this film. I really couldn't. What else is there in the movie news sphere?
Well, there was a Vulture article that came out that caused quite a stir recently. I believe it was an interview. I didn't read the article, but I believe it was an interview with Geoff Johns and John Berg. Is that right, Adam?
No, it was Geoff Johns and Diane Nelson.
And Diane Nelson. Okay. So anyway, it was an article where they were talking sort of about the state and the future, I guess, of the DC. I was about to call it the DCEU, but one thing in this article sort of gave me hesitation about calling it that now. You want to talk about some of the details of this article, Adam?
Okay, basically, first things first, the reason why Jordan's not calling it the DCEU is because it was never called that from the beginning. It was just something that I think an online outlet had dubbed it. And the name stuck, and so they just kind of it was almost a running joke in the DC offices that's what it was called, and so they just let it go. But it's not called that. They didn't say what it's called. I'm just gonna call them DC Films personally until I'm told otherwise.
I was I was halfway joking when I said I wasn't going to call it the DCEU anymore. I was halfway joking because, to be honest, that's still what I've been calling it. It's just a habit now, and I kind of like, even though I realize now that that wasn't their intention, like, for it to be called that, I still kind of like that. I think it's a good name for it, so I might actually just stick to that personally.
To me, it's too long to be DC Extended Universe. To me, they're just DC films, and that's what I'm going with. So when Jordan says DC Extended Universe and I say DC films, we're talking about the same thing. It may confuse you people, but hey, if you manage to get through the first week's audio issues, then you'll deal with this. And hopefully the audio issues are getting better. We continue to work on them, and hopefully each week they are getting closer and closer to where we want them.
Baby steps.
Yes. The other aspect of the article that was really interesting was more along the lines of the fact that they said that going forward post Justice League, the films are still going to be part of the same universe, but they won't be telling one connected story. Meaning, so like as it stands right now, you know, Man of Steel to Batman vs. Superman to Justice League are basically telling the story of Superman's quote-unquote birth as a hero, his death as a hero, and then Justice League will obviously deal with his resurrection. So the those three films are telling the, you know, it's a Superman story at its core. Going forward, DC Films is going to be more like Wonder Woman, where you remember how Wonder Woman had basically the note and the picture that bookended the beginning and ending of the film, but the rest of the film was its own thing. That's what the DC universe on film is going to look like going forward. So yes, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Aquaman, and whoever else they introduce will be inhabiting the same universe, but the films will be able to stand on their own and tell their own individual unique story. So, and you know what? Personally, I'm fine with this because Wonder Woman was fantastic. That's number one. And number two, I don't need DC films, each individual film, to be a commercial for the next film, like three quarters of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. I just don't. And personally, a lot of times when I watch a Marvel film and the scenario is so great for one particular hero, I'm like, well, why doesn't, you know, like for instance, Iron Man 3, I'm like, why doesn't Captain America just swing down and, or come down and help Tony, right? You know what I mean? Because it was very much a terrorist plot line and whatever. So I'm like, this would be perfect if Captain America came in. And you have that expectations because really, with the exception of Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man, the MCU is just one film leads into the next and if it leads into the next. And to be quite honest with you, this is not a Marvel podcast, but to me, the Marvel films are all... They're suffering from, each one is starting to feel like the same, more of the same. There's no individuality for me, and there's no uniqueness. And if this allows the DC universe to be, all these characters to be part of one universe, but have unique individual storytelling, then I'm all for it. What about you, Jordan?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't feel like this is really anything that seems like, it doesn't really feel like news to me. Like, it doesn't seem like this is unexpected. This is sort of what I sort of expected them to be doing because, you know, we saw it with Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was very, as you alluded to, was very much a standalone film. It had a little bit of connective tissue to the rest of the DCEU. Again, I'm calling it that again. I'm going right back to calling it that. But it had connective tissue in terms of the bookends, but you know, it was very much a standalone film. And so I feel like this is absolutely fine, because what it'll allow filmmakers to do is they can do for all the solo movies, they can do something. If they don't want to use any other characters in the universe or tie into the stories, they don't have to. Like, you can tell a great solo Batman film without, you know, Superman showing up or whatever. You can tell a great Green Lantern film without any you know, anything from the rest of the universe playing into it, really. But then we can still have our team up films like Justice League, like Suicide Squad 2, right. Like Gotham City Sirens, and you can have all of that too. So it's still a shared universe. And if the filmmakers want another character show up, let's say
Flashpoint is a perfect example. Wonder Woman is going to be in Flashpoint.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So. And presumably even more than just Wonder Woman, right. If I'm guessing.
Right.
That's a great example of, you know, if a filmmaker so chooses, they have the advantage of, yes, if I want to, I can use elements from other parts of the DCEU, but it's not a mandate necessarily to like set up any other films. You can allow each one of the filmmakers to really tell their own story. I'm all good with this.
And you know, the funny thing is, you know, people are ready to jump off a ledge because, oh, they read the article and they think, oh, this means that Warner Brothers is abandoning the cinematic universe. The article never said that. Not once.
And it's crazy to me that Geoff Johns actually had to come out on Twitter and sort of confirm, yes, the DCEU is still remaining intact. This is still going to remain a shared universe.
Like my theory, or my not theory, my advice to people, especially these people that are overreacting, is read the actual article. Forget about clickbait headlines. Read the actual article. Reading is a wonderful thing. And I wish more people on the internet would actually do it instead of reading a headline and then overreacting without reading the rest of the article. It would make internet life a lot easier.
Although to be fair, I've got to confess that, like I said before, I did not actually read this Vulture article, but
you also weren't, you know, getting your pitchfork ready and getting ready to go attack somebody for fear of the DC Films universe.
Yes, very true, very true.
Being potentially disbanded, which nobody ever said. So I'm on board with it. Look. Whatever gives the filmmakers the best option to make the better film, that's what I'm for.
Ultimately. Yeah, I agree. I just want great films, yeah. So I'm with you.
Anything else in terms of movie news?
Oh, yes. So next up, we've got a Teen Titans Go movie, a theatrical released one, is coming out on July 27th, 2018. So this sort of came out of nowhere, but we got this surprise sort of thrown at us, Adam.
Yeah, I'm going to be straight up honest with everybody on this podcast that's listening. I can't stand this show. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's stupid. Now, look. The show is not targeted to me. I've tried to sit down and watch it. I don't get the humor. I can't get into it. Now, the core audience, it's aimed at younger viewers. There's nothing about that. And as much as I don't like the show, personally, and you won't see me watching it, it is a popular show for whatever reason. There are a lot of kids that this is their first exposure to DC. And for those kids, I'm glad that they're getting a movie from the show. Because to me, whatever can get more young children exposed to the DC comics and DC characters, it's a good thing. Because as they grow up, they'll further their expansion of different forms of DC media. So for me, as much as I don't like it, I don't like the show, and I, you know, look, if my nephews come July 27th of next year say, we want to go see that movie, I'll go with them because I want them to watch things DC related. And I want to be, you know, there to help facilitate that DC experience for them. And I want to watch their experience getting into these DC characters. But again, it's not something that I'm looking forward to. Unless I'm taking a child, I probably won't see it. But I'm happy that it's existing for the young kids that do watch it and that could potentially go see it and learn to love DC because of it. So that's my take.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take, Adam, for sure. I am more excited about this movie. I'm going to be honest. I've seen every single episode of the show. I watch the show every week. But it took me a while to warm up to Teen Titans Go. I was a huge fan of the original 2003 Teen Titans animated series. I grew up on that, and that was a fantastic show.
Oh, that was much better in my opinion.
Yeah,
I'll watch that. If somebody puts that on, I'll watch it. No problem.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great show. And so it took me a while to warm up because, like, for so long, everybody, a lot of fans of the original show had been campaigning for it to get a sixth season. And then when the news came out that they were rebooting it with the same voice actors. But then once I found out sort of the tone that they were taking, I was a little bit disappointed with Teen Titans Go at first. And it took me a while to warm up with this to the series. But, you know, I stuck with it and I've come to enjoy it quite a bit now, actually. There's a lot of, even though the humor doesn't usually work for me that much, sometimes it does. There's some clever stuff in there, I think. But there's a lot of DC Easter eggs. So a lot of times I'll just watch the episode and they've got like
for
stuff.
The Easter eggs, yeah.
Yeah. All the time hidden in the background and stuff. And it's really fun to look around for that. So I don't know exactly what – I don't know. It seems to me like – because Teen Titans Go is a series where they do 11-minute episodes. So I'm curious how they're going to turn that into a feature-length film. But, you know, I'm excited to see what they do with it. I guess they have done some specials sometimes where they do like 5-part episodes or whatever. So I guess you could look at what they've done with those and look at how they could possibly turn it into a feature film. But it's exciting. We're getting so much Teen Titans stuff now because like this will actually be the fourth Teen Titans animated film we've ever gotten because we got Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo, which was based on the original series, and we got the two in the DCU AOM shared universe with Justice League versus Teen Titans and Teen Titans the Judas Contract, and now this, and also. Besides that, this is also beginning a trend of animated DC films getting theatrical releases. Because, Adam, when you think about it, before 2016, only one DC animated film had ever gotten a theatrical release, and that was Mask of the Phantasm.
That's true.
Since 2016, look how many there's been. There's been we had Batman the Killing Joke. We had Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. We had the Lego Batman movie. We had... Batman and Harley Quinn, and now this is going to be the fifth one. So before 2016, there'd only ever been one, and since then, there's five, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting to me, too, that there's sort of we're on this trend of getting these DC animated films theatrically released. And I am pretty excited about this movie. So I do plan on going to see it when it comes out next year, and I think I think it'll be fun. I'm not super excited about it, but, you know, I think it'll be fun. And in terms of Titans stuff coming next year, we've also got the Titans TV series coming out next year as well. Or I shouldn't say TV series necessarily, but, you know, the streaming service series.
Right.
So I'm wondering if they're trying to sort of releasing these at similar times to sort of capitalize on the hype from the two of them.
Oh, for sure. I think it definitely the timing is, I think, you know, it's planned. And so, you know, while the kids are watching Teen Titans Go in theaters, I'll be watching Titans on the streaming service. So I'm good. And Young Justice, which is a proper, legitimate Teen Titans show on the streaming service as well. And to your point, I did like the Teen Titans version.
The Teen Titans.
The one that preceded this Teen Titans Go.
Oh, the original one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So take that for what it is.
I'm glad to hear that.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just, look, it could be so much as I don't like the animated stuff.
It's a very simplified animated style.
Maybe I could get used to the younger skewed tone. Maybe I could just deal with it. But to me, that animation is atrocious. So I just can't get into it. But hey, good for those kids that love it and that can go to the theater. Because look, kids of a certain age should not be watching the Dark Knight trilogy. And kids of a certain age should not be watching Batman vs. Superman or Man of Steel. So for those kids, yeah, go watch this. And I'm glad they're going to have it.
Absolutely.
And I think that's all I'll say on that until we have further news on it. Anything else in movie land?
Yes, we've got Danny Elfman has made some recent comments. I know I'm throwing this at. We didn't talk about this before the episode.
I want to save that. I want to save that for when we get to the question period, because one of our questions deals with that. So maybe we'll save that.
Oh, you just want? Okay, I was gonna bring up the question now along with that. But if you want to save it, we can save that for questions.
We'll save it. Let's save it. Let's keep the anticipation.
All right. Well, I'll hold off on that, and we will move straight into TV news then.
Yeah. We'll keep the anticipation.
Okay.
Ask that question, I should say.
Yes. Yes, we will get to that. So, TV news. unless he just fast forwards and then, you know.
All right, I forgot about that option. Screw it. Don't fast forward.
So anyway, moving on to TV news, we got a poster for the Arrowverse crossover this year. It was drawn by Phil Jimenez in the style of an old Justice League cover, and it basically reveals that the Arrowverse crossover this year is going to be called Crisis on Earth X, and it's going to tie into the Freedom Fighters The Ray animated series, which is coming on the way on CW Seed, and we already got a trailer for that at Comic-Con, so if you haven't seen that, check it out. I thought it looked pretty cool. But anyway, we've got news that I thought so too. And we've got news that is going to sort of tie into the Arrowverse crossover this year with Supergirl, Arrow, The Flash, and Legend of Tomorrow. And it is going to be in that order because Arrow is moving to Monday night for that one week. And so this poster, I thought it was a really cool looking poster. It has a bunch of the Arrowverse heroes on it teaming up to take on some of the threats coming from Earth X. I don't know if they're going to Earth X or if the threats are going to come here to Earth 1 or to Earth 38. But I thought the poster looked awesome, and I think this is going to be really cool. The concept of the crossover seems really cool to me. So what do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I love, first of all, the look of the poster was cool, and especially the fact that it was done in an older comic book, based off an older comic book, and it was done in that style. I really enjoyed that. And the idea of it being, you know, Crisis on Earth X, which, if you've read some of the comics, that's an Earth that basically goes by the idea that the Nazis won the war. And all the superheroes are basically Nazi agents, right? So that's gonna be interesting for sure, and I think it's very relevant to what's going on in the world today with the whole, you know, the cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs orange guy that's in the White House that. Placates white supremacists. So it's gonna be interesting to see that. I find it, again, I think it's very non-coincidental that they're using that given the political climate that we live in. Do you remember Multiversity?
Yes, the Grant Morrison Multiversity. Yeah.
There was
yes.
one issue that sort of dealt with that universe, and it was probably I think that storyline was 8 issues. I only liked 2 of them. One of them was that Earth X issue. The other one was the one where, remember, it featured the son of it featured Damian Wayne and the son of Superman as the world's finest. Those were the 2 issues I liked. But yeah, so that universe, that Earth that they're dealing with is interesting. It's a fascinating subject, and I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, the you know, Green Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and everybody go up against their Nazi counterpart. I think that's going to be fascinating. I'm excited for it. It's going to happen. The crossover is, when it happens, it's going to happen over two nights, Monday and Tuesday. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that's correct, because they're moving Arrow to Monday for that week. So, yeah.
Right. So I'm really looking forward to that. And that we will be covering on the podcast, guaranteed.
Yeah, and on that poster, I forgot to mention it. Also, Barry and Iris are on there, and so it looks like their wedding is getting interrupted. It reminds me of in Smallville season 10 when Clark and Lois's wedding gets interrupted.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to say is that we've heard that this is going to be a more emotional crossover than last year's, whereas last year they went for the bombastic, I guess is the word for it, crossover. But last year's I thought was quite emotional too, with the Arrow 100th episode. But I'm excited to see what they do in terms of that this year.
Yeah, the Arrow episode was more of a pull on your heartstring kind of thing. But you're taking it up to another level when you're dealing with a wedding and an alternate universe that's overrun by Nazis. So, you know, that's not that, whenever you're putting Nazis into your storyline, it's not bombastic, over the top, and it shouldn't be. There should be some serious ramifications discussed and dealt with, you know. So that makes a lot of sense, and I'm excited for it. I can't wait. Last year's they pulled off fantastically, and this year should be just as exciting.
Yeah, hoping for more of the same. So, and this year it's going to be four nights. It's going to be truly four nights. So,
yeah.
So that's exciting.
Yeah,
too.
The Supergirl episode will actually be a functioning episode in the crossover, as opposed to just the end where, spoilers, where Flash and Cisco go get Supergirl. That'll be fun.
Yeah. And I guess then our last bit of news is also some more TV news. Actress Amy Jackson has been cast in a recurring role as Saturn Girl on Supergirl season 3.
Yeah, look, I'll be honest with you. I have zero knowledge of the actress. To my understanding, she was born in England, and plies her acting trade in Bollywood films up until this point. This will be her first North American exposure. Unless people of our podcast watch Bollywood films, then you may have seen her. I don't know, but personally, I don't. So this will be my first exposure to her. So I can't comment on her acting skill at all. But what I can say is that I trust the Arrowverse people to know what they're doing when it comes to casting these things at this point. They haven't let me down yet, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt there. In terms of the Legion of Superheroes and Saturn Girl, we saw the Legion ring in season 1 in the Fortress, correct?
That's correct. Yes, I can't remember if it was season 1 or season 2, but yeah, it was in the Fortress.
Might have been season 2. You could be right. But we saw the Legion ring, so we knew that concept was out there, and I think it's fantastic that this may be the first step to introducing the Legion of Superheroes into the DC TV Arrowverse. I'm excited.
Yeah, I agree as well. I have very similar thoughts. I'm not familiar with Amy Jackson either. I do trust the Arrowverse casting people, because they've really done a great job so far. So I'm confident she'll do a great job in the role. In terms of Saturn Girl coming on the show, though, that's really exciting to me. Saturn Girl is one of my favorite Legionnaires. I loved her on Smallville when she showed up on Smallville, yeah. And she was one of my favorite characters on the Legion of Superheroes animated series. And so I'm really excited to see her on Supergirl, and apparently we'll be seeing quite a bit of her since she's in a recurring role. You know, my theory, and spoilers for season two of Supergirl, but when Mon-El got sucked into that vortex at the end of season two, my theory was that he got sucked into the 31st century just due to his comic ties to the Legion. Right. And so I'm wondering if her appearance, and maybe we'll even see more Legionnaires, we don't know yet, but whether that has anything to do with Mon-El, whether her showing up has anything to do with him. Yeah, we did already see the Legion ring in the fortress, as you alluded to, so we've sort of been getting set up for that, I feel like, to see the Legion. Also, I think we've seen the Legion ring on the Flash, too, when he's been running through, I guess, the Speed Force, or running through time.
Yes, you're right. You're correct on that. We did.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah. So they've sort of been setting this up in the Arrowverse in general then, and so I'm just really excited to see us finally get some payoff for it. And, right. You know, I'm really excited to see Amy Jackson in the role and to see what they do with Saturn Girl on the show. So, yeah, awesome stuff.
Anything else TV-wise?
That's it. I think we can move on to Batman the Animated Series review.
Actually, can I just touch on something real quick?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
TV-wise, okay, so I can't exactly remember the quote of the source, but I think if you go on Krypton site, you can find the genesis of the quote. But apparently Tom Welling was doing an interview because he's on the upcoming season of Lucifer, which will, by the time you hear this episode, will have already aired its first episode. So he was talking, and he was saying that if the producers asked him, Tom Welling would appear on The Flash. He said he has a way that he could do it, and he knows that his way is a way that they could make it happen. To this I say, look, I get why he didn't want to go on Supergirl, because it's a different... I mean, his show had a Supergirl, played fantastically by Laura Vandervoort. So him playing Superman on Supergirl would kind of have been a continuity mess. But it makes sense that he'd want to go on The Flash, because, first of all, why not? It's a great show. Second of all, The Flash has the capability to travel through time, and as well as different multiverses, different universes. So during one of The Flash's escapades, he could very easily wind up on the Smallville Earth, and we could see Tom Welling's Clark Kent, or heaven forbid, even Superman on that show. Although I think if Tom Welling ever did it, I can tell you the scene if you want, and yeah, we can look back at this episode if it ever does happen. I think what would happen is Flash would be running. He'd end up in the Smallville continuity. He'd run by the farm. He'd stop at the farm, and he'd see Tom Welling in a red jacket and a blue T-shirt and jeans, and that would be Clark Kent's outfit in that episode, or it would be the Metropolis Daily Planet Clark Kent. But I would still be hard-pressed, even if we did see Tom Welling on The Flash, I'd be hard-pressed to believe that we're actually going to see him in a Superman costume, even though at this point, for all the people that want to see you do a cameo on one of these shows, just put the suit on. That's my take on it. Any thoughts, Jordan?
Holy shit, I didn't realize that he meant that he would want to appear as Clark Kent or as Superman on The Flash. I thought he was suggesting that
I'm assuming that that's what he meant, because, really, look, if he's going to go on The Flash, which has the multiverse capability, it would be stupid for him to play anybody else but.
Oh, dude, that would be amazing. That would be amazing, and this is so exciting to me, because Smallville is my favorite TV show of all time, and so just to be able to revisit that in some capacity, you know, I think that would be awesome, and just to see Tom Welling in that role again. I mean, I I would be just ecstatic. I really would be. And so if Andrew Kreisberg and Greg Berlanti and the other guys were able to somehow put this together and make this happen, and Tom Welling, it sounds like he's willing to do it. I mean, yes, please. Yes, that would be awesome to see the Flash meet him, and it would be awesome if we got some if I had my way, I mean, it would take place after the Smallville season 11 comics, and we could hear, and spoilers for the Smallville season 11 comics,
which we are going to review at some point.
Sweet. That'd be awesome. Yes. So those Smallville season 11 comics, spoilers for them, but Impulse dies in those comics, and Clark finds out that Bart was actually from the future, and that that the aliases that he'd been using back when he first met him in season 4, Bart and Jay, that those were his, or at least Barry and Jay, that at least Barry, well, anyway, was his grandfather.
Yes.
So it would be really cool if Tom Welling talked to Barry, or sorry, I'm saying Tom Welling, if Clark on The Flash talked to Barry about Bart and told and explained all that to him or whatever, and that would be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, let's see what happens there. But it sounds like he's willing, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think now it's time to delve into another review of Batman the Animated Series. We've made a little alteration in our episode order. We were supposed to review Christmas with the Joker, but I thought, you know what? That seems tailor-made. Well, it is tailor-made for our Christmas episode. And so we're going to save that for our Christmas episode. And we're going to skip ahead one episode. And this episode is a Scarecrow episode, which is perfect because today, as of this recording, it is October 1st. So Halloween is approaching. And what better way to celebrate that than to review an episode with the Scarecrow? Jordan, tell us what this episode was called. And give us a brief summary of it.
Alrighty, well, this episode is called Nothing to Fear. And basically it deals with Scarecrow launching attacks on Gotham. Is it Gotham University? Is that the name of the university? Gotham University. And he's launching attacks on Gotham University to get revenge for basically them firing him for going overboard with his psychological fear experiments. And basically at the same time, Bruce is sort of struggling with feeling as though his father would feel that he's disgraced the Wayne family name. And so then once he confronts Scarecrow as Batman, Scarecrow is able to play on that fear, and Batman begins suffering hallucinations of his father due to the Scarecrow's fear toxin. So I guess that's basically the general idea of the episode.
Yeah. I gotta say, I really liked this episode a lot. What I liked about it, again, was that it's our first experience with the Joker in this animated universe. The Scarecrow.
The Scarecrow, yes.
Damn it, I had the Christmas with the Joker in my head. But the first appearance of the Scarecrow in this universe. And I like that his motivation is, one of revenge. And that they gave us a little bit of flashbacks to his time as a youth, where he just liked to scare people, whether it be human beings or animals. He got a perverse, disturbing pleasure out of scaring the daylights out of different beings. And then when he became a professor at the university, he was doing experiments on the students, unbeknownst to them. And he's a disgruntled employee who got fired and wants to take revenge by, he causes these incidences at the university to the point where it gets so bad that they have to close down. You said that Batman experiences, when he's exposed to the toxin, he experiences visions of his father. who those visions tell him that he's a disappointment and he dishonors the Wayne name. And I like that because that to me is something that deep down Bruce would fear. And I think what was really good about that was that that seed was planted in him very early on in the episode, where he was talking to the the dean of the university, who said that he knew his father. He knew Bruce's father, and he was the one who planted the seed of your father would be so disappointed in your, you know, your playboy, aloof, you know, behavior. Little does this guy know that he's Batman, but the fact that it planted the seed of doubt in Bruce Wayne's mind was cool, I thought. And also the idea that that, you know, just that Bruce, like, the big thing that I liked was that it didn't, because when I first saw this episode, I thought, okay, here comes the obligatory my parents were shot in an alley scene. But I'm glad they didn't show that. It was it's still heavily, his fear still heavily involved his parental figures, but it wasn't dependent on re-showing that scene. And I like that a lot. And I also like the reassurance that Alfred gives him in the cave, where he says, you know, that's, you know, that when, because Bruce is telling him what he experienced with the toxin. And he says, you know, I wonder if my parents would be proud. And he goes, of course your father would be proud. He goes, and I know this because I'm proud of you. And I really love that one line between the one exchange between Bruce and Alfred in the scene. In terms of Jonathan Crane and the whole, who was the voice actor for this?
For Scarecrow?
Yeah.
Henry Pollack II.
Yeah, and I thought he did a great job because he really gave off that arrogant, aristocratic, entitled professor vibe. You know those, you know, back when we were in school, you had those jerk professors or teachers that thought they were the smartest human being in the room and better than
yeah.
He really exuded that personality to a T. So I really thought he did a really good job of that. And his voice, by its very nature, has a very creepy sound to it. So I thought he was perfect for the Scarecrow. I also really liked the vision when. Well, also it's worth noting, and I don't know if you picked up on this, but Scarecrow says something to the effect of, "I'm the worst nightmare. I am the terror of Gotham. I am the Scarecrow."
Yes. Right?
Something along those lines. And this is the first time we hear Batman say, what's the classic Conroy Batman line?
I am vengeance.
Right.
I am the night. I am Batman.
That's the first time, to my knowledge, that we hear it said on the series.
Well, it's certainly the first time on the series, but I think, yeah, that's the origin of that quote, yeah.
And I still get, well, I didn't quite have this effect when you said it, Jordan, but when Kevin Conroy utters it, I still get goosebumps every time. And the other thing that really stood out to me in this episode was Scarecrow gets doused with his own fear toxin, and he sees Batman as a giant bat coming towards him, like walking towards him. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the scene in Batman Begins when Batman hits Scarecrow with his own gas.
Yes, but don't you mean that the scene in Batman Begins reminded you of this episode?
But no, seeing that scene again reminded me of Batman, reminded me of the moment in Batman Begins where Bruce is that monstrous bat after he infects Scarecrow with his own gas. And so I remember when I first saw Batman Begins, and I remember this episode, I always wondered to myself, I wonder if Chris Nolan or David Goyer reference that episode when...
Oh, I bet they did, because they also took reference from another Scarecrow episode in terms of his plan in Batman Begins.
Right. So it's very likely that he did. But those are my thoughts on the episode. Overall, I really, really, another top-notch episode for me. And I really liked it because in this one, Scarecrow was his own villain, like he was the mastermind. Whereas in Batman Begins, he really is Ra's al Ghul's crony. You know what I mean? He's a minion of Ra's al Ghul, because he's basically just there facilitating Ra's al Ghul's larger plan, right? So he's a pawn for Ra's al Ghul, basically. I still love the Scarecrow in Batman Begins, but I love the fact that here he's very much his own villain. Like he's a, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those are my thoughts. I really like this episode. What about you, Jordan?
I really like this episode as well, but there's a couple things that hold me back from loving it. I guess I'll start out by saying one of the things that makes me really have a lot of appreciation for this episode is that I talked about this last time we did a BTAS review, which is that I didn't grow up watching the series as it aired, but I had a bunch of episodes on VHS. And one of my VHSs was the first 5 episodes of the series. So this was one of those. So I watched this episode just on repeat. I had that VHS on repeat all the time as a kid. So I watched this episode a lot. So I have a lot of nostalgia for this episode, and I do think it is a really good episode. I guess I'll talk about the two things that I don't like about this episode first, and then I'll get into the best stuff that I really do like about this episode, just so that I end on a high note. Okay. I guess the two things holding me back from thinking that this is a great episode is, I know you said you liked him, and I think that Henry Pollack II does a good job as Jonathan Crane, but I don't like him as Scarecrow. And they recasted Scarecrow later in the series when they did the new Batman Adventures, and Jeffrey Combs started voicing him. And I thought he did a much better job. He was much scarier. I just don't find Henry Pollack II scary as Scarecrow. I think he's fine as Jonathan Crane, but I wish they had done something else with his voice in the Scarecrow costume, because Jeffrey Combs made him a lot scarier. And so that's one thing that held back this episode for me, was that I didn't find Scarecrow's voice particularly frightening. The other thing is Scarecrow's design I don't find particularly frightening, which is something that they'd, within the DCAU, they'd revamped that design twice, because actually after this episode, they made him a little bit scarier, I thought, in the Batman Animated Series. But then they did one of the best Scarecrow designs ever for the new Batman Avengers. It just made him so much scarier, where he had this really frightening, like, shadowy face, and where you could see his eyes, they were white, and he also had this noose around his neck in that design as well, that just made him absolutely terrifying. And he had this cane that he'd walk around with. I just can't imagine how much even better this episode would have been if they had started with that design from the very beginning. So moving beyond that, though, because those are my two complaints about this episode, hold it back a little bit for me. But there's so much good stuff in terms of Bruce's psychology in this episode. You alluded to it, of course, and really talked about how the thing with his feeling like his father would be ashamed of him. And it's sort of something I'll reference Batman Begins just like you did, but I'll reference a different part of Batman Begins. Bruce struggles in that movie with whether, you know, he's made sacrifices in terms of he has this playboy persona and it makes people think poorly upon him, but he has to keep up that facade in order to throw suspicion away from him in terms of him being Batman. Mm-hmm. And there's the scene where he tells everybody, where he pretends to get drunk and he tells everybody to leave the party because Ra's al Ghul is there.
Right.
And you can see it in his eyes, even though he knows he has to do this. You can see that, when one of the guys at the party says, he says, "The apple's fallen very far from the tree, Mr. Wayne." And you can see that that really actually does hurt Bruce a lot in this. And I feel like it's the same thing here in this episode, where Bruce really does feel like, oh, am I living up to the Wayne name in this episode? And so I feel like that's on display here in Nothing to Fear as well. And I think that it's really some of those hallucinations with Thomas Wayne are just really well done. And you talked about it. That line is just one of the best Conroy lines ever. The "I am vengeance, I am the night, I am Batman." And it's just a phenomenal line. And I really enjoyed that. So, oh, and I would also say that there's some really good moments with the GCPD in this episode, because I really enjoyed Bullock a lot in this. I always enjoy Bullock. He's one of my favorite parts of Batman the Animated Series, but I just find him funny. And so I enjoyed him a lot in this episode, too. So, yeah, overall, really good episode. There's just a couple things that held it back for me a little bit from being a great episode, but still a really strong episode. And Scarecrow is one of my favorite villains. And I really enjoyed seeing some of his origin in this episode as well. So, yeah, thumbs up for me.
Awesome. Well, good news, Jordan. We have questions.
We do indeed.
And so we're going to get to those questions now and hopefully provide some answers. Do you have the questions in front of you, or do you want me to?
I've got them. Okay. You want me to read them?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, from our buddy Sam J. Rizzo.
My co-host on Simply Superman Batman podcast.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. He asks, and this is going back to the Danny Elfman thing that I almost brought up before, but okay, we decided to save.
Just before you ask the question, what's the context before you ask?
Okay, we recently heard from Danny Elfman, and he revealed that he is going to be using both the John Williams Superman theme and the Danny Elfman Batman theme. I should say his Batman theme.
From Batman 89. Yeah.
Yes, from Batman 89 and Batman Returns, and yes. Also from Batman Animated Series as well, sort of. Anyway, that theme he's going to be using in Justice League. So what Sam asks is the John Williams theme being used in Justice League a good idea?
All right, I'll give you my answer first. Absolutely, alrighty. Yes, it is. I'll tell you why. Because, well, first of all, let me give context to that. When this was announced, a lot of people on the internet freaked out because, again, it seems like people don't read, because the assumption by the freakout brigade was that, oh, he's going to use the Superman theme from John Williams. So that automatically, by its very nature, means he's going to throw out the Hans Zimmer theme from Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman. Nowhere did Danny Elfman say that. What he said was there are 2 minutes in the film where he's using the theme in a very dark moment. And what that theme does, first, and he said, some people will notice the theme, others won't. It just depends on what kind of a level of a fan you are. And he said, in the scene, it's a very dark, serious moment where we are not sure what side he's on, meaning Superman. So obviously there's going to be a twist to the theme. But to answer Sam's question, yes, using the John Williams theme in Justice League is a good idea, because to me, the John Williams Superman theme is iconic. It's as iconic as his Star Wars theme. It's as iconic as his Indiana Jones theme, okay? It's iconic like the James Bond theme. And look, I get it. Man of Steel, the DC Films universe is not the same continuity as the Donner films. I get that. But the Superman theme, as composed by John Williams, is iconic to the point where it transcends the iteration of the character, in my opinion. Okay, and look, the continuity of James Bond in film is about as messy as a 6-month-old diaper when it's full. It's a disaster.
Thank you for that visual, Adam.
Does it not prove my point?
Could you not have said the X-Men universe or something like that?
What's the difference? James Bond, X-Men, so continuity is non-existent. My point is, do you see the James Bond producers coming up with a new theme every time there's a new James Bond? No. And look, even if, let's play devil's advocate. Danny Elfman said, "Screw it, we're throwing out the, we're not we're, the, we're when Superman returns in this film, we're going to use the classic beats from the John Williams thing." Even if he said that, there's no problem with that, in my opinion. But what's going to happen, in my opinion, and I'm pretty sure you can take this to the bank, is that you're going to hear, when Superman returns, you're probably going to hear elements of the John Williams theme, the Hans Zimmer Man of Steel theme, and a little bit of twist by Elfman himself, which is going to create a theme that is as epic and rousing as the greatest superhero in the world deserves upon his return to life in Justice League. So I'm on board with this, and whenever we do get a Man of Steel sequel, if they want to bring back the John Williams theme, I say yes. Because you know what? To me, you know what the best parts of Superman Returns were? The theme and Brandon Routh himself. So I'm all for the theme being reused. What about you, Justin? Jordan.
That's all good.
I'm all over the place. I'm having conversations with potential guest stars, guest podcasters. So my we talked to Sam earlier, so my head's a little bit all over the place.
It's all good, man. I'm going to say yes as well, but with a little bit of a caveat.
Okay.
And basically what you said is that Danny Elfman never said he was throwing out the Hans Zimmer theme. You're right. He did not. And that's the way I interpreted it too, that he's not throwing out the Hans Zimmer theme. And if that's the case, if Hans Zimmer's theme is still the main Superman theme in Justice League, but he also throws in the John Williams theme just for a second, that's totally fine with me. I don't want to lose that Hans Zimmer theme. The Hans Zimmer Superman theme is quite possibly my favorite piece of music that has ever been written. I sometimes just turn on, I just go to YouTube sometimes and I just turn on the flight scene from Man of Steel and I just watch that. Like just like every once in a while I just get the inclination, like once a week or whatever, like even that often, to just turn that on, because it's just one of the most beautiful and most inspirational things I've ever seen in a movie, and it's largely because of that music. So I actually prefer the Zimmer theme to the Williams theme. However, of course I love the Williams theme as well, and so if he wants to throw that in just for a second, I think that would be awesome, and it would certainly have me cheering in the audience if he were to play that, and I think that would be awesome just for a moment in the film to use the Williams theme again. But ultimately, I do really hope that the Zimmer theme is used as the primary theme still in Justice League.
And I know Sam didn't mention it, but you did, in terms of Batman 89, he's going to use his Batman theme. And yes. I'm on board with that too, because here, look, I'll tell you this straight up. I am a big defender of Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. I love the movie, especially the extended cut. One of my biggest issues with that film was the Batman theme, and here's why. Because to me, if you were to just play that theme without telling anybody what it was from, I think they would be hard pressed to listen to that and think, oh yeah, that's Batman.
Yeah,
it wasn't identifiable at all. So if Danny Elfman wants to if Joss Whedon tells Danny, go ahead and use your Batman theme, I'm totally on board with that, because I loved the Dark Knight trilogy themes, and I loved the Batman 89 theme, but I could not stand the Batman theme from Batman vs. Superman. It was just so generic, and that's on Junkie XL, because Hans Zimmer passed the baton to Batman to him. He said that he focused on Superman's theme while he left it to Junkie XL. And this is why I'm glad that Danny Elfman is on board this film, because to me, Junkie XL didn't do enough with the Batman theme to impress me. I'm on board with the Batman 89 theme too.
You see, the news that he's going to be using the 89 theme, that didn't surprise me. That I was sort of expecting from the moment that we heard that Elfman was going to be replacing Junkie XL, the first thing I thought of was, huh, I wonder if he's going to use his 89 theme or also his Flash theme in the movie. And so this, it looks like he's not going to use his Flash theme, but it does look like he is using that 89 theme. Well, and that was one thing I was wondering about.
The Flash theme is difficult because it has a lot of cues to the Batman theme. Like, they're very similar. That's true. So to use both of them is counterproductive, but...
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. So that's the one that is the one that I say yes without a caveat. That I'm like, yes, use the 89 theme. That would be awesome. I'd love to hear that again in a live action movie. I think that would be really cool. So that was something that I sort of had I was wondering about from the moment that he stepped in as the composer. What I will say is that I don't love the Batman v Superman Batman theme. I like it though. I thought it was okay. I don't like it nearly as much as the Elfman or Zimmer Batman themes, but I thought it was all right. What I did love in Batman v Superman was Beautiful Lie. Oh my God, that song is gorgeous.
It's not the Batman theme. Right, yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah. The Batman theme was the dun 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 dun. Yeah.
And it's just like, all right, I've heard this in 25 other you know, action. Like, you know what it sounded like? It, to me, it was like, oh, look, it's a theme from Mad Max. All right, good. He just recycled some of his work. Congratulations.
It was very generic.
Yeah. So, it's, you know what it sounded like? A Marvel score. Because those are all generic. And...
The Marvel TV scores are not generic. Like, I love that Daredevil intro music. Well, that is MCU.
Sure it is. They can. Jeff Loeb can keep telling you that, and they can keep saying the incident on a newspaper, but they can tell you it's all connected. But that's the biggest bullshit hashtag I've ever seen. Since the existence of hashtags. Okay? I'm just going to say that right now. So the other question Sam asked, because otherwise the Marvel zombies are going to get upset if I keep going. The other question Sam asked was, when am I guesting on the show? The answer to that is a news update. Sam will be guesting on our show for our Justice League review. So that's when you'll hear Sam and I... we really are crossing universes. We're crossing the Simply Superman Batman podcast universe with this one. So it fits for the Multiverse Musings premise. So Sam will be guesting for a Justice League review.
It's a reunion. It's a reunion episode.
It's a reunion and a first team up. Both.
Yeah.
We're killing two birds with one stone. That's how we do it on this podcast. Okay, what's the next? Who's our next questioner? I know it's a two-part question.
Alrighty. We've got two questions from Stephen Maverick Marshall. Mm-hmm. His first question is...
Just before you go with the question, thank you, Stephen. Stephen's a long-time listener. He's been listening to... He listened to Simply Superman Batman podcast, so he was one of the five. as you were, and he also listened way back when I used to be on World's Best with Isaac Frisbee, so he's been a long time listener. So thank you for the question, Stephen, and go ahead.
Stephen's first question is Matthew Vaughn your number one choice to direct the next Superman film, or is there someone else?
Look, I just saw Kingsman, the Golden Circle this weekend. I loved it. Elton John's cameo, I'm still laughing. My abs hurt because I laughed so hard at that cameo. I have three choices for Man of Steel sequel. Matthew Vaughn would be, of the three, my top choice. For the Superman sequel. And look, what I like about Vaughn is that, yes, Kingsman is a more violent story. It's rated R, obviously. But what his films have shown me is that when they need to have deep character moments. You can have that. What Matthew Vaughn's films have shown us is that they can be there can be deep character moments when there need to be, but it can also be humorous and upbeat and a little bit more lighthearted when they have to be. So he has the ability to have that balance, in my opinion. So yes, he would be my first choice. I know you didn't ask about this, but here are my second and third choices. The second choice will not happen ever now that he's committed to doing this other film, but it would be J.J. Abrams is my second choice, because I think that, look, his Superman flyby script gets a lot of flack, but a lot of the crappy parts of that script were stuff that John Peters insisted on. And now that that Village Idiot hairdresser is no longer a part of the production team on any future Superman themes, or movies, I should say, I would love to see J.J. Abrams direct a Superman film. And it's worth noting that the best scene in Superman Returns, the airplane scene, was in Superman Returns. Bryan Singer and his cronies of writers lifted that from Flyby, which angers me even more because it's even less originality in Bryan Singer's version, but that's another podcast for another day. And my third choice would be J.A. Boyona, who directed that movie where Liam Neeson was a tree, or voiced a tree. I can't remember the name of the movie.
A Monster Calls.
That's it,
I believe.
And he is currently directing the follow-up to Jurassic World. What is it called? Jurassic... what's the follow-up? I can't even remember.
Me neither.
But he's directing the sequel. He's currently directing the sequel to Jurassic World. So those are my top three. Matthew Vaughn would be my first choice on that list. So that's your answer. What about you, Jordan?
Alrighty, well, Matthew Vaughn would not be my first choice. It's more, honestly, because I'm not actually that familiar with Matthew Vaughn's work. And that's why he's not. And it's also, like we talked about his quote.
Have you seen X-Men First Class?
I have not.
Remedy that.
Remedy that, alrighty.
What about the first Kick-Ass?
I haven't seen the Kick-Ass movies either.
Watch the second one, ignore, but the first one, watch it.
Okay. All right. I've been wanting to watch them. I'm a big fan of Chloe Grace Moretz. She's actually my fan cast for Batgirl in the DCEU. So
I've actually been wanting. How old is she now?
She's, I think, 20.
So I can officially say she's gotten hot now. Like, can I call her hot without sounding like a creep? Because I know when she did Kick-Ass, she was a kid, but she was 12. But 19,
yeah,
20-year-old Grace, whatever her name is, is really good looking.
Yeah, I second that.
Myself in any further hot water, and I'm gonna take a drink of cold water right now. But that's my go ahead.
No, it's all good. So anyway, I'm just not that familiar with Matthew Vaughn, and we talked about his quotes about Superman on, I guess, two episodes ago. Now was it?
It was our big premiere. Yeah.
It was our premiere. Okay. And I wasn't over the moon about his comments. We discussed those quite a bit, but I wasn't over the moon about that. And I talked about on that episode, too, who my first choice would be, and that would be Zack Snyder. But in terms of somebody that would actually, I feel, would be likely to direct it, because even though I said, yes, in a perfect world, Zack Snyder...
Somebody has a chance to get the job.
Yes. In a perfect world, where I get everything I want... that probably wouldn't be a perfect world, actually. That would just be a perfect world for me. But in a world where I get everything I want, Zack Snyder would direct it. But in terms of somebody that I actually think has a, you know, any shot to direct it, I would say David Yates is somebody I've been wanting to do a DC movie for a while. He's done a bunch of the Harry Potter films.
That's a good choice. Thanks.
He's somebody that I'd love to see do it. And then here's sort of a dark horse candidate is Stephen S. DeKnight, who directed several episodes of Smallville, including Justice, so their Justice League episode. And he's also done some directing for the some writing. He wrote and directed that episode Justice, and he's also written and directed some episodes of the Marvel Daredevil series.
Yeah, so I think he's currently directing Pacific Rim, the sequel.
Yes.
I don't know if he'll get the job, but hey, why not?
Yeah. He's sort of my
If they, if they announced him, I wouldn't be upset about that.
Yeah.
And Steven had another question.
He did indeed. Let me pull that up. Oh, what's the next DC hero you'd like to see get their own TV show?
Ooh, I have three choices.
Alrighty.
Because of my, you know what? Our first couple of questions, I'm going to give you more than what you asked for. so we talked about it earlier. We talked about Saturn Girl coming on, Supergirl, and the possibility of introing the rest of the Legion of Superheroes. I think that will happen over the course of time, and why not spin them off into their own CW series, a Legion of Superheroes series. Either on the CW or on that DC streaming service that's coming in 2018. The other option that I would have that would be perfect for the CW is Dead Man. You could have Quantum Leap meets Supernatural as your Dead Man show. And I think that would work, especially for the CW. And I think you could do something very sort of film noir on television with The Question. Those are three that I like to see. And in a perfect world, you know, on the DC streaming service, because there's only so much that the CW can fit on its network, I'd like to see a solo series with Tyler Hoechlin as Superman. But those are my answers.
Yeah, I'd be totally on board with any of those four that you gave, actually, Adam.
Steven's a good guy. I had to give him an extra one.
Instead
of three, I gave him four. He's a good guy.
Especially the Tyler Hoechlin Superman series. I really like what Tyler Hoechlin's done on Supergirl, and I think it would be awesome to sort of give him his own series as well, and to sort of see him explore his rogues gallery, I guess, and his we've met some of his rogues, I guess, on Supergirl, but to meet we've heard Lex Luthor mentioned a bunch on Supergirl, and to see his Lex Luthor and to see Lois Lane I really like what they've set up with him when he's shown up on Supergirl, but to see more of that, I think that would be awesome. I would have had a great answer for this question several months ago, but something changed, and I'll explain what that is. Earlier this year, my answer would have been a Batman series. But that's changed after the Gotham season 3 finale, because now Bruce has gotten so close to Batman on Gotham that I'm like, what's the point at this point? Like, if Gotham were to end, then that's what I'd want, is I want to see like a straight up Batman series, because I really want to see a modern Batman TV series, because look how many Superman TV series we've gotten over the years, and the only Batman one we've ever gotten is the 60s one. So
technically, one of my favorites, Birds of Prey, but that was...
Okay, Birds of Prey was not a Batman series.
Yeah, it was kind of, sort of.
Batman was not in that series other than intro.
I get it, but it was his world. That's what I'm trying to say.
It was his world, certainly. Yes, it was in his world, but it wasn't a Batman series.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I love Birds of Prey, too, so that's not a knock on it. It was a great show. But I would love to see a modern Batman show, because for me, and I've said it before actually on this podcast, I think already in one of our first two episodes, that I prefer the TV medium over the film medium, because it allows you to do more long form storytelling. And so I think that's something that I'd really like to see with Batman, because as much as I've liked many of the live action Batman films we've gotten, I really want to see some of the storytelling, the advantages that TV could open up for the character. And it's something that we really haven't seen in so long. So Batman would sort of be, if Gotham were to end, which I hope it doesn't end anytime soon, then that would be my choice as a straight-up Batman series.
Well, here's an idea. How about this idea? You're right. Uh-huh. If Gotham, were, let's say if Fox were to say, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Maybe the CW streaming network could pick it up and take the adventures further with an aging Bruce, an older Bruce Wayne.
That would be great. You know, that is a great idea, Adam, because I think I said it actually on our last episode. I would love to see David Mazzau actually get to play Batman.
Yeah, because Fox is notorious for canceling a show too early.
Yeah.
So if, God forbid, that ever happens with Gotham, I hope it doesn't. But if they, I hope the DC streaming service wakes up and says, okay, we'll take it over. Or if that's not the case, if Gotham runs its eventual course, whatever that may be, why not? Here's another good idea, at least I think it is. Partly because I thought of it, but what if you take Tyler Hoechlin's Superman and pair him up with a DC CW Arrowverse Batman on the DC streaming service? And a World's Finest TV show.
That'd be awesome.
Jeff Johns, if by chance you listen to this podcast, which you don't, come on, man, throw us a bone. Look, here's my theory on that. You want me to pay for this service? Now, I'm obviously going to pay, right? Because I'm a sucker for paying, as the Suicide Squad soundtrack says, and I'll pay for this stuff. But Warner Bros. Has always had that mentality that, well, we won't put Batman on TV because Batman is our cash cow, and we want you to pay for it. Fine, I'll pay for Batman. Put him on a streaming service TV show with Superman. I'll pay. I'm done. I'm there.
Yeah, I agree. But I just think that's such ridiculous logic, though.
I will hand my credit card to Kevin Sugihara or whoever the hell runs that show, or that service, and say, here, take my money.
Yeah, I agree. But it's such ridiculous logic to me, though, because it's like, who's not going to pay to see a Batman movie just because there's Batman on TV? Like,
this was the stupid logic I warned was that they've seemed to lax their position on that, so just hoping. But yeah, either an extension of Gotham on once Fox has had enough, or a World's Finest show with Tyler Hoechlin as Superman and whoever they would ultimately choose as Batman. That's another. There's five now for you.
Yeah.
Steven, there you go.
And I guess my other choice, though, and this was also before some other news came out not too long ago, but I also really wanted to see a Batgirl TV series. And now that we're getting the Batgirl movie, I'm not as, like, you know...
Okay, what about Batwoman?
You know, Batwoman is not a character that I'm nearly as big a fan of as Batgirl, but sure, I'd absolutely watch it, Batwoman series.
Yeah. Well, it's an option for the streaming service, right?
It is, absolutely, well, absolutely.
Why not a show called Robin's... don't call it this, but just... Here is, for shits and giggles, this is my name for it, Robin's Nest, right? And you have, and they almost swore because I got so excited. They team up. And you have, so you have Nightwing, you have Tim Drake as Red Robin, and you have, what's his name, Damian.
Yeah.
You could carry your own show. I'd pay for that.
Would you set it in the universe of Titans where you've already got Dick Grayson?
Because you already got Nightwing.
Yeah. Hey, I'd be down for it.
Why is DC not soliciting our advice? That's my only other question. See, I turned the question back on you people. Why are they not calling us? My phone's rang twice. You won't hear it, but my phone's rang twice during the recording of this podcast, and it wasn't Margot Robbie, much to my chagrin, and it wasn't Jeff Johns either. Why aren't they calling? I don't know. But while I'm
waiting,
is that it? Is there anything else?
I'll throw in one more that's kind of a long shot. If we never get, because we've been hearing rumors of maybe a Lobo film.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a Lobo TV series if we never got the film.
Yeah, and you can do the whole bounty hunter thing. That could work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see it. But I think, you know what, with the DC... with the alternative DC Films line coming, that by all accounts, if everybody over there at Warner Brothers is sane, we'll call DC Elseworlds. And I'm going to keep banging that drum until they name that imprint. I think with the DC Elseworlds line, I think you're going to see Lobo, because you could go lower budget and you could go R with it. So I think you're going to, I think the movie will come to fruition.
Okay. I hope so. I hope so. Cause I love Lobo. I love the main man. So I'd love to see that.
Is that, and I think that wraps up our show for tonight, right?
It does. Yeah.
Slightly shorter episode than, not by much, but slightly shorter.
Slightly shorter.
That's it for today. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and I hope you guys have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Social media, Adam?
Oh, right. Social media. We won't see you next time because we're going to tell you this. I keep forgetting about this. I don't know why. It's not, I'm not like David Sandberg, who seems to be on Instagram every chance he gets.
Yes.
But and good, I like that because it keeps us updated. But you can find me at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter.
And you can find me at BatFanJordanV on Twitter and on Instagram. And I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews. So, if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, we would really appreciate it.
And until next time, have a great week, and so long, everybody.
Bye-bye.